America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. So honored and pleased and delighted in every way to be broadcasting today from the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. I found out today, this is the largest presidential library of any president's in terms of land area. My immediate question was, wait a minute, this is larger than that garish monstrosity in Austin, Texas, which is the Lyndon Johnson Presidential Library, which honestly was built to equal the size of President Johnson's ego. But it's a beautiful location, beautiful views, and beautiful memories of one of the greatest of America's presidents, Ronald Wilson Reagan. And somebody who knew President Reagan, worked with him in a crucial capacity, actually spent 6 years in the White House under the Reagan administration, initially as a speechwriter for George Herbert Walker Bush, the vice president, and then as an aide and speechwriter for President Reagan. I'm talking, of course, about my friend Peter M. Robinson, who is the Murdoch Distinguished Policy Fellow at the Hoover Institution, where he writes about business and politics. He edits Hoover's quarterly journal, which is indispensable, the Hoover Digest. And he hosts Hoover's video series program, Uncommon Knowledge. Peter, an uncommon pleasure to speak with you.
Michael, always a pleasure to talk to you, the more so that I can picture you now at the Reagan Library, one of my favorite places, and surely one of the most beautiful places in the country.
Without doubt, and beautiful both for the messages it transmits and for the physical location and the memories that it evokes. Peter, I wanted to begin by asking you to react to a couple of statements today by members of the Biden administration, and not asking you to try to channel President Reagan or to channel President Herbert Walker Bush. Actually, I think his son is one of the commentators that I'd like you to comment about. Mm. But earlier today, the Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro Mayorkas, who has got a devastating crisis going on the border that seems to be no closer to solution, was asked about what's going on in Cuba, which is so remarkable and would undoubtedly have inspired President Reagan if he had been able to see that. This is what Secretary Mayorkas had to say earlier today. Listen. This is clip number two.
Allow me to be clear. If you take to the sea, you will not come to the United States. The time is never right to attempt migration by sea. To those who risk their lives doing so, this risk is not worth taking. Again, I repeat, do not risk your life attempting to enter the United States illegally. You will not come to the United States.
Your reaction, Peter Robinson?
Well, I'm hearing this for the first time, Michael, so I'm just, the first thing I have to do is just sort of adjust to the idea that a senior official in the American government would say to Cubans who suffered for six decades under communism, drown before you come here. It's all of the borders matter. There's no doubt about that. But we have an administration which permits the borders to be porous, is now making some kind of, I don't quite know why he's making this grand statement. Is there any evidence that Cubans are trying to flee to the United States? Or not that I'm aware of. Maybe some news has developed today. But the whole discussions of the border come second. The first thing any president of the United States or members of his administration should be saying is, we stand with the Cuban people. Not don't think about coming here. We stand with you in your own homeland. We will do everything we can to support you. We celebrate the spirit that 6 years of communism has still been unable to crush. That's what the president, anyone who might be president at this moment, and his senior officials should be saying, not don't get into a rubber dinghy and risk your life for freedom to come to just it's all wrong. It's just all wrong. There's no correct ordering of priorities there. This country stands for liberty. We say that first. The border matters. The rule of law matters. They're difficult. All of that, yes. But first you say what the country stands for and that we stand with those people in Cuba.
The most famous speech in which you participated, you didn't suggest to President Reagan that he say, first of all, don't try to come over that wall.
Unbelievable.
I mean, that would not have been remembered well in history, and this won't. I actually think this is, again, especially President Biden gave a decent statement yesterday, and apparently the protests in Cuba, it is extraordinary, and it's been a long time coming, and it's about time. I'm thinking also now of the literally hundreds of thousands of former Vietnamese boat people.
Yes.
Who did board boats to escape a nightmarish takeover in Vietnam in 1975. And now, by the way, are playing a powerful role in Republican politics. All I can wonder about, it may be even wrong to think this way, but I think you have to. Is this a reaction singling out Cubans saying don't come? Is that have something to do with the fact that these are not automatic Democrats who would be coming here to this country, getting into small boats to flee communism?
Michael, I almost wish you hadn't raised that point because it's so low, but it's very hard for me to try to talk you out of supposing it. Now that you're giving me a moment to think this through, here's what it feels like to me. The Biden administration really doesn't understand. Well, here's what they don't understand. They don't understand people like Michael Medved and Peter Robinson and those who are listening to your show today, Michael, those who listen to your show every day. In other words, they think conservatives really are dark people who have a crabbed view of the world, and really what they want is what's theirs, that we have no sense of generosity toward immigrants. And what conservatives want to hear about isn't liberty, it's keeping people out of the country. I suspect this was a statement to protect the administration from what it expected might be an attack. Oh, who knows? They may think this is the way people are going to attack them on Fox News tonight or something of that nature. They just don't understand. They don't understand conservatives. They don't understand ordinary the goodness, the open-heartedness of ordinary, they don't understand the country. They just don't understand the country, which is why when they talk to their own base, actually this is the tragedy in my mind of Joe Biden. He was an ordinary working-class Democrat who had some feel for the country and some feel for the old blue-collar, honorable, patriotic tradition of the Democratic Party. But in running for president, he decided to throw in with the woke crowd, the hard left. He doesn't really understand them. That's why he needs his talking points. They can't let him go off script. He doesn't understand the woke crowd. He's lost touch with the good, the kind of traditional patriotic Democrat. So he's in some way, there's a man who's high and dry and doesn't know what to say to whom. I feel there's no instinctive connection with anybody anymore in Joe Biden.
When we come back, President George W. Bush was interviewed in Germany and made some moving, profound, and important comments about what's happening in Afghanistan and with American foreign policy. We'll get to that with Peter Robinson, speechwriter extraordinaire, best-selling author, Hoover Institution fellow, all coming up on The Medved Show. 1-800-955-1776.
Go out there and win one for the Gipper.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Talking about rhetoric by presidents and their associates with Peter Robinson, who knows something about that, having spent 6 years working in the Reagan administration. We're broadcasting live today from the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library here in Simi Valley, California. Beautiful location and a beautiful place with some beautiful people who've come out to participate in this broadcast. Speaking with Peter Robinson of the Hoover Institution. Peter, one of the things that is so striking about what we just listened to of Secretary Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security, saying so clearly to Cubans, don't come, don't come, don't come. His family, he was born in 1961 in Havana. His family moved to Florida when he was a little boy. And they were a double whammy. Castro was not good news for Jewish people. Communism never is. And so, again, for somebody with that background to say this is just extraordinary. This must be a very difficult moment for him, and it's hard to imagine what he was thinking. But there will be consequences. There's also a great deal of reaction to a statement by President George W. Bush, who's been very quiet, very reluctant to criticize any of his successors. And then he gave an extraordinary response to a question in Germany about America's decision to pull every single one of our troops out of Afghanistan. This is former President George W. Bush, clip one.
It's unbelievable how society changed from the brutality of the Taliban. And now all of a sudden, you know, sadly, I'm afraid Afghan women and girls are going to suffer unspeakable harm.
Is it a mistake, the withdrawal?
I think it is, yeah. Because I think the consequences are going to be unbelievably bad. And I'm sad. And Laura and I spend a lot of time with Afghan women, and they're scared. And I think about all the interpreters and people that helped, not only U.S. troops, but NATO troops. And they're just, it seems like they're just going to be left behind to be slaughtered by these very brutal people. And it breaks my heart.
Your reaction, Peter Robinson?
This is upping stakes and just going home is not the way to do it. I'm persuaded, I don't know the details, it's a military question. My colleague here at the Hoover Institution, H.R. McMaster, does know the details. Of course, he was, for a year or so, he was President Trump's national security advisor. There are ways to retain a small presence in Afghanistan that H.R. is convinced, and I defer to his military analysis, of course, would prevent the kind of catastrophe, bloodbath really is what it may shape up to be, that former President Bush was mentioning just then. At the same time, there's no excuse for putting people in a position, Afghan people in a position in which they're going to end up exposed to the kinds of horrors he's talking about. It's been 20 years. We spent $1 trillion. I worked it out the other day. That was enough to give every Afghan man, woman, and child $25,000. 2,400 Americans killed, countless others injured. One administration after another just permitted that engagement to go sideways. Oh, my goodness. Michael, you tell me, but getting out the way we're getting out is the wrong way to do it. But where was the lesson of Vietnam? Define your objective and then achieve it. This is this kind of open-ended commitment where there's hard to explain exactly what we intended to accomplish, hard to explain exactly what has been accomplished, hard to explain where that $1 trillion went. This is not the way to get out, but it also hasn't been the way to seize, to win, to accomplish an objective, in my opinion. What's yours? Here's the treat for me. To be on the line with you, Michael, is that I get to ask your opinion.
My opinion is exactly like yours. The Afghan war has not been... By the way, I don't think it's the darkest day in American history or the darkest episode in American history, because to have 20 years in which Afghanistan was not a center for terrorist activity,
right,
is a real accomplishment.
And yes.
And again, there apparently has been real progress, but it's so very fragile. What I fear is that the withdrawal from Afghanistan totally, without any true presence at all, sends the wrong signal to terrorists. I mean, there are reports, as you know, that the Al-Shabaab in the Horn of Africa and in Somalia and elsewhere, these groups are all gaining strength. ISIS is preparing to make a comeback. And I know that the Biden administration says they're trying to shift our attention to China, which is another danger. Isn't this a moment where the country would welcome a Ronald Reagan?
Here's a story about Ronald Reagan. The answer, of course, is yes. That I am Michael, I love you for all kinds of reasons, but one of the reasons is that it's such a pleasure to talk to you, because it validates my own thinking. Our minds tend to run in the same grooves, and
thank
since
God.
I know your mind is a fine one, it relieves me when I'm reaching the same conclusions as you. But just look what's happened in the recent months. China has eliminated freedoms in Hong Kong, just wiped them out. What did the Biden administration do? It issued some sharp words, a few sharp words. We now withdraw completely from Afghanistan. We're trying to cut a deal with Iran. As far as I can tell, one of the reasons that deal is going more slowly than the administration might like is that Iran has increased its demands. Trying to cut a deal with Iran at the end of some period of years, Iran will get a nuclear weapon. And they're right back to wanting to reinstitute such a deal. And now we have this repression in Cuba. As I understand it, I just read the newspapers, I don't have inside intel here, but as I understand it, Colombians and Venezuelans are both present in Cuba and up to no good. And the Biden administration, well, the big comment of the Biden administration is, you're on your own, Cuba.
Haiti, don't forget Haiti. You mentioned Colombians and Venezuelans. It was Colombians and Venezuelans, apparently, who executed the assassination of the Haitian president.
And bad guys all around the world, from Taliban in Afghanistan to Xi Jinping in Beijing, are looking at the Biden administration and saying, can we get away with anything?
Yeah, and the president is obsessed with voting reform in Texas. This is the greatest threat to democracy since the Civil War. Actually, I think the evil empire of the Soviet Union might count as a greater threat to democracy than Governor Abbott in Texas. We will be right back on the Medved Show.
Go out there and win one for the Gipper.
To pop culture and from coast to coast, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, yes, I think every single American, every single lover of liberty ought to be concerned about what's happening in Cuba. And again, if you think back to 1988, 1989, 1990, as the evil empire was crumbling, and there were all these miracles, really miracles. I mean, I wrote the book, American Miracle, and the new book we're going to be talking about tonight, God's Hand on America. You never felt, I think, at least in my lifetime, more dramatically, the presence of some higher power when all of these tyrannies, I mean, profoundly evil tyrannies, we're falling one after another. They're tearing down statues of Stalin, not Christopher Columbus or Frederick Douglass or Abraham Lincoln or even Robert E. Lee. Stalin. And basically, you looked at countries. We used to have Captive Nations Week, and unfortunately, the Biden administration is not doing Captive Nations Week. They should. Captive nations were all of those nations, some of which have a very noble and profound history, including Poland, including Hungary, including Lithuania and Estonia and Latvia, including so many countries in Eastern Europe that were under the boot heel of communist tyranny. And then with President Reagan handling the entire situation with restraint and finesse, and ditto President George Herbert Walker Bush, you had freedom marching everywhere. And wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if Cuba, which has been one of the last holdouts for old-fashioned Stalinist communism and cult of personality dictatorship, if that changed? And in the midst of all of this, with this going on in the world, and again, the struggle and the threat from China, as Peter Robinson was saying, the stripping of even basic freedoms in Hong Kong, Japan has showed more resolution in challenging China and in defending our interests and our ally in Taipei, the nation of Taiwan, which is a profoundly important nation. We right now, there's not the feeling that freedom is on the march. By the way, part of that freedom on the march was South Africa, where Nelson Mandela is released from prison, where he had served for more than 20 years, and suddenly this evil apartheid regime is transformed into one man, one vote, which had been a bizarre dream. But it happened. It happened. And now it does not appear that things are moving in the same direction. And I don't think it's because evil is on the march. It's inattention is on the march. It's distraction is on the march. It's because of petty political games are on the march. It's because people seem to be focused not on the greatest problems in the world, but on various political issues that may be trendy. For instance, the United Nations, which has not been particularly outstanding. Well, frankly, an Israeli friend of mine, describes the United Nations as the United Nothing. But here they go. They have now created a new panel to investigate systemic racism in policing. And it's not policing in the United States. It's policing around the world. The United Nations decided yesterday to set up a panel of experts to investigate systemic racism in policing against people of African descent, adding international weight to demands in the United States for accountability for police killings of African Americans and reparations for victims. A panel of three experts in law enforcement and human rights will have a three-year mandate to investigate the root causes and effects of systemic racism in policing, including the legacies of slavery and the colonialism, and to make recommendations for change. It will look at issues ranging from excessive use of force, racial profiling, and police handling of peaceful protests, to links between racial supremacy movements and the police and the criminal justice system. Now, what do you think the odds are that they will take a look at violence by policing in Hong Kong or in Cuba? Or anywhere else, basically, other than the United States and maybe Great Britain. I mean, this is bizarre. We are involved, and because basically, if you're asking about why you have this tragic overrepresentation of people of African descent in many countries around the world, not just the United States. Could you ask, is it really a police problem? Or are there deeper problems, maybe with societal racism? But culturally, in any other way, deal with it seriously? James Carville, who is nobody's idea of a conservative, actually speaks to this, that people are treating the tiny changes in voting regulations, and they are. Nobody's right to vote is being taken away. They're treating this as some sort of appalling violation of freedom. They are getting ready for a full-out, full-throated defense, which I think is going to lose for them politically, of critical race theory and this other idea that, basically systemic inequality and systemic racism is responsible for all our national problems. But what is this doing for Democrats? Listen to James Carville, clip 4, on with Chris Cuomo on CNN.
But remember, Eric Adams is a former cop who went against the Democratic mentality of letting everybody out of prison. Part of it was COVID. But a lot of it wasn't. It was bail reform. Some of it was good. Some of it was overreach. And he campaigned against it.
Right, but Chris, that's 15 or 20% of the Democratic Party. Okay? The overwhelming number of Democrats, most important constituents in our party, are blacks and suburban women. They're not into this. All right? And, you know, again, we're seeing it time and time again. We're letting a noisy wing of our party define the rest of us. And my point is, we can't do that. I think these people are all are kind of nice people. I think they're very naive and they're all into language and identity, and that's all right. They're not storming the Capitol, but they're not winning elections. And I think people sort of see this for what it is, and people are way more interested in their lives and how to improve them than they are in somebody else's pronoun or something.
The war on pronouns. How many people here, just out of curiosity, have ever had an encounter where you're filling out a form and they ask preferred pronouns? Look at that! It's like half the people here at the Reagan Library. Preferred pronouns. He, his, her. Whatever. And then there's this. Finally, there are some Republican responses and some pretty good ones. One by Senator Joni Ernst of Iowa on this crisis of the Democratic legislators showing their courage and their status as freedom fighters. And again, Republicans are following the lead of Senator Cornyn of Texas yesterday, that these same people who are trying to take away the right of elected representatives, and nobody's disputing their elected representation, these same people who are asserting to try to block that right by walking out are the people who want to get rid of the filibuster, which is the traditional way that a minority could actually make a difference in legislating. So is the message to Republicans, well, okay, you want to block a bill? Just go home. Walk out of Congress. Is that what, then you get hailed as a freedom fighter? We'll be back on The Michael Medved Show. Coming up.
The Michael Medved Show.
That is really extreme.
Michael Medved Show, broadcasting from the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Simi Valley, California. And one of the things I'm looking forward to is actually taking a look at some of the new exhibits. I understand there's a terrific exhibit about the FBI here. And I'm actually one of those people who thinks that having had occasional dealings with the FBI. Okay, having said that, it makes it sound terrible. The one thing where I was interviewed 3 times by the FBI, I was not involved or imputed to be involved with anything criminal or shady, except I was present in June of 1968 when I was a kid. I was in college, and I was part of the Robert Kennedy for President campaign. And so I was at the Ambassador Hotel. And I actually write about that in my new book that we're going to be talking about later tonight. God's Hand on America. And I had three different interviews with the FBI. They interviewed literally everyone who was in that building because, of course, the great fear was that there was somebody else who was involved with Sirhan Sirhan. There's no question that he's the one who shot and killed Senator Kennedy. But again, I look forward to the FBI exhibit, and because it's an important American institution. One American institution that is also important is voting. And I think that Joni Ernst, the newly reelected senator from Iowa, she was one of those Republicans who everybody thought she was going to lose because she had a very well-funded opponent and she was running in Iowa, and Iowa used to be a swing state. Iowa's one of those states, like Ohio, that has moved more over into the Republican column. In any event, Joni Ernst was on with Jake Tapper. And here's what she said about this whole completely blown out of proportion issue of voting reform and so-called, quote, voter suppression and voting restrictions. Clip 10.
I am a former county auditor, commissioner of elections in Iowa, and I do believe that we need to make voting easier for people to participate in, but harder to cheat. And so my opinion is that many of these voter laws that have been passed by state legislatures are intended to protect the integrity of the election system. So we have seen various changes through the years in the state of Iowa, and you know what we've seen? Greater voter participation through each one of those elections. So I think there are ways that we should be working together to protect the integrity of elections, but make sure that those that are allowed to vote in elections are the ones that are voting. Those not allowed to participate are not participating.
Okay, sound reasonable? It sounds like a threat to freedom! There's this from Mitch McConnell. And Mitch McConnell takes a lot of gas, but I think history is going to be very kind to Senator McConnell. And people should never forget that we have three outstanding Supreme Court justices, Justice Barrett and Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Gorsuch, who wouldn't be sitting on that court if it weren't for the senator from Kentucky. In any event, Mitch McConnell had this to say about the Democratic majority in the Senate. That he has to work with. A Democratic majority, it's not really a majority. It's 50-50. Kamala gives them majority control. Here's Mitch.
Notice that the Democrat minority in the Kentucky, in the Texas legislature is up here today, and I think it's quite interesting to see the Democratic majority in the Senate concerned about minority rights in the state Senate in Texas. I guess if you live long enough, you'll see almost anything around here.
Yeah, well, that's, of course, a line. And then John Thune, the senator from South Dakota, who speaks of the remarkable irony in the Democratic position. Listen.
Yeah, and on that point, the Democrats from the Texas state legislature are in Washington, D.C. here, as the leader pointed out, ironically, to protest the fact that they're being sort of run roughshod over in Texas, being cut out of the legislative process. The same Democrats who are trying to get rid of the legislative filibuster here in the United States Senate. Again, I mean, remarkable, right? The irony.
Yeah, again, there is an irony. And what would the question be? If you think it is right for the minority in the Texas legislature to block legislation by just walking out, why wouldn't that same thing apply to Republicans in the United States Senate and Republicans in the United States House? In which case, you block all legislation, including the new infrastructure plan. Yeah, they keep reading. Every day there's an article, we're really close, we've got an agreement, the Democrats are really close, we're going to have a bipartisan infrastructure plan. Joy Reid of MSNBC actually seems to think that's a terrible idea. Why? Listen to this political thinking and just tell me, what is even the basis for believing this is an idea that should be considered? This is clip 3.
you know, you have maybe 10 senators who want to keep the filibuster. They seem to be clinging to that more than they are to democracy. They don't seem to have any urgency. They don't have the urgency you just described. Why would you go along with voting for their infrastructure bill? Manchin really wants that. Why don't some of you senators say, well, you don't get our votes on your precious infrastructure bill that you need for your politics if you don't give up the filibuster? Or why not say, you know, there's got to be something Kristen Sinema wants other than to be on TV and mock, her own base. Why don't you say to her, you want my vote on this? You don't get it. You don't get your 50. You don't get your special stuff unless we get what we want. Why? I don't understand why senators are not using the leverage they have over the recalcitrant 10 or however many of them there are to say you don't get your way unless we get help on voting rights. It's more important than anything else.
Okay, do you really believe that? Do you believe that the number of Americans who are deeply, deeply concerned about the For the People Act, which would basically unconstitutionally take away the power that the Constitution gives to the individual states to make their own voting rules? Do you think the number of people who care deeply about the For the People Act is greater than the number of people who actually would like to see some bridges built or repaired or highways fixed, or some of the essence of this infrastructure stuff that basically everybody can agree on? I'm not talking about another choo-choo train from Merced to Bakersfield, which has been such a triumph here in the state of California. How many people have enjoyed riding that train here? It doesn't exist. No, it doesn't exist. And by the way, it may never exist. It may never exist. Okay, that's not what we're talking about. The infrastructure bill they're talking about appeals to people who are going to get good jobs because of it, appeals to communities are going to be served more effectively. There is expansion of broadband that's part of that infrastructure bill. It's popular. Americans actually want it. And here she's talking like a child, Joy. You're talking like, so, well, if you don't give us the voting rights and get rid of the filibuster, what percentage of Americans really care about getting rid of the filibuster? And this is one of those things that, by the way, is something that is a political lesson that is very important. When you talk about politics, it's not only how many people want something done, it's how much they want it done. In other words, one of the reasons that we have all these polls that show people want tighter gun regulation, as if it would solve something, and the polls showing 80, 90%. Why doesn't it happen? Because the people who really care about that issue are people who defend the Second Amendment and are people who are, for the most part, gun owners, because there are a lot of them in the United States. The filibuster, this is going to be, so this is what Joe Biden's going to go to the public before the next election, the big national election to determine control of the House and Senate. And he's going to say, I have a dream. We have a bridge to the, Clinton already did the bridge to the 21st century. We have a bridge to the 25th century. Why not? And we have a view of America's future. Someday we will see a land where the filibuster no longer stalks the Senate. Hooray! Yay! Freedom! Freedom! This is out of touch. I'm sorry, it's nuts. And frankly, it also goes against one of the best movies ever made, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. And if people haven't seen it, it gives you a view of filibuster at its Hollywood best. Speaking of Hollywood best, we will continue with an entertaining approach to homelessness and more in this greatest nation on God's green earth.